Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Episode 184 of, I think, of Below the Belt. It's been a little minute. My home life has been a bit mental. So a thousand apologies for not having recorded in a minute. It's been 19 days at time of recording. But and we're back once again with John McDonald. How are you, sir?
Hi, Colin. Very well, thank you. How are you?
Yeah, pretty good. I'm good. Very busy. Work's busy. Home life's busy. And then it's Christmas as well. Are you a Christmas person? You a bar humbug? Where do you sit?
I like Christmas. You know, it's one of these times. I love that week between Christmas and New Year where you just live on your couch in tracky bottoms, pajamas, whatever, and watch darts and football and eat too much, and all time seems to stop. Like, I'm a big fan of that.
I'm the same. I love that time. I try not to plan much in that period. You just do nothing. Just watch movies, watch TV, like you said, the darts, the sport. Interesting, you mentioned the darts. I don't always watch it, but I do flick on and off of it. And earlier on, I saw Frank Warren say that Joshua Wilder will be promoted by Queensbury. Did you see that?
I did. That all events in Saudi Arabia will be promoted by Queensbury.
Yes, yes. And I saw that, and I instantly had this kind of thought that Barry Hearn, not Eddie, Barry, he started the PDC, what is it, the Professional Darts Corporation, I think it's called, and they took over from the BDO. The BDO, where what they used to do, the darts at the lakeside, I think it still exists, the BDO. But the BDO was the main company, and then the PDC came along, and they've taken over now, and they're the main company. It was Barry Hearn that kind of started that, and that led to Eddie Hearn being given the exclusive contract on Sky to cover boxing. And fast forward a few years, it feels like Eddie Hearn is the BDO and old Frank is the PDC. And it feels like the tables have turned a little bit, John.
See, I'm not entirely sure how truthful Frank Warren is, because at the end of the day, this weekend's card is being promoted on DAZN, which Frank Warren invariably referred to as Dead Zone or the app previously. And here he is promoting an event that is going to be on DAZN, shaking hands with Eddie Hearn. Realistically, the promoters are irrelevant at this point. these cards are put together by Turkey Al Sheikh and the PIF in Saudi Arabia. Whoever's promoting it, whoever's name gets stuck on it, it's irrelevant. Like, it's got nothing to do with you guys. Like, I know they stuck you in video in the promo videos as undead ghouls, which I thought was brilliant, but realistically, Eddie, Frank, it doesn't matter. It's a PIF card.
Yeah, and that's true. That's actually a really valid point, because for a long time, I've kind of felt that the promoters, and they're both guilty of it, Eddie and Frank, and all the others actually, sometimes they have forgotten that it's not about them, that it's about the fighters. And sometimes they've let their own egos. And then not those two aren't the only ones kind of guilty of this, really. I think even some of the guys abroad are guilty of that, kind of letting their own egos get in the way of their fighters. But yeah, now it's about the fighters. And you're right, it's Saudi, it's PIF. They're the ones that are, they're the straw that stirs the drink now, aren't they? They're the ones that's going to decide what's going to happen. And, you know, and if Anthony Joshua wants to go for Hrgović and fight for a world title for a third time instead of fighting Deontay Wilder, well, tough titty, mate. You're fighting Deontay Wilder because that's what the money people want. And I think that's what boxing wants. Nobody's really interested in Joshua Hrgović for a vacant belt. I don't think anybody wants to see that, really. That we want undisputed, and we want good fights outside of that. So, yeah, I think you're right. It was a funny analogy that I thought of earlier on, but I think you are right. Neither of them really matter overall. We are going to talk about the Saudi card in a little while. I thought we'd just kind of talk about some other stuff first, though. I saw this morning, John, on Twitter, or X, whatever the fuck you call it. I call it Twitter. I'm never calling it X. It's stupid. I'm calling it Twitter. That's what it is. It's like when the shop up the road from you changes name. I remember there was a shop up the road called Mace, and then it changed to Costcutter, and I just kept calling it Mace for like the next 10 years. I wasn't just calling it Mace. It's just what I'd called it before, and it's a sign on the front of the shop at the end of the day. It's still the same bods in there. I saw on Twitter this morning, Ring Magazine, or The Ghost Of, it put out their kind of their front cover for their next digital magazine. And they had the Fighter of the Year contenders on it. They had Naoya Inoue, Devin Haney, Tank Davis, and Terence Crawford as kind of like their four fighter shortlist for Fighter of the Year. Do you go along with those four, or is there somebody else that leaps out?
Well, it could be Marlon Tapales for all we know. If Tapales pulls off the upset, there's no debate.
That's a fair point, because that would be his second upset win this year, wouldn't it, as well? Because he wasn't expected to win the first fight that he won.
Yeah,
either.
Second upset win would end the year as undisputed at super bantamweight. Like, I don't think there's any disputing at that stage who the fighter of the year is. Tank Davis shouldn't be there. He was involved in a huge event, but at the end of the day, he'd just beat an untested prospect. Like, get him off.
Yeah, I didn't understand Tank when I saw that. Even Crawford. Did he only box once, Crawford? Did he box before the Spence fight? Or was he only boxed Spence this year?
He's only boxed Spence this year.
Yeah, so for me, Crawford and Tank, like, Crawford, fantastic win and a fantastic performance. But I think Haney's done better. And I think Inoue has done better. And yeah, it could even Tapales, you know, it could be Tapales by December 27th. But yeah, any out of those four or anybody else, is there anyone kind of standing out at you at the minute?
I think it's not really a massive standout year. Devin Haney was brilliant against Regis Progre, but he inched past Lomachenko in a fight that could have gone either way. It's not really screaming fighter of the year. I think Inoue, after what he did to Fulton and presumably what he's going to do to Tapales, is probably the clear front runner, but it hasn't been a banner year for somebody doing anything stand out as far as I'm concerned. What do you think, Cal?
Yeah, there's no one that I can think of that leaps out, really. I think in terms of British, I think Chris Billam-Smith's got a shout for the British Fighter of the Year. I think he's had an excellent year. Although his performance the other night was a little bit, wasn't all the way there, but he got the W. But yeah, I expect Inoue to win on Boxing Day, and I think if Inoue wins on Boxing Day and he wins in style, I think to go undisputed for the second time in 12 months at second weight class would probably put him over the top over anybody else. But we'll see. He's got to win the fight. You have to fight the fights. So I imagine we'll talk about it early again next year to see where we stand on it. Another one that possibly could be on a short peck is Bam Rodriguez. He's only boxed twice this year, once for a vacant title, but then a fantastic performance at the weekend, John, against Sonny Edwards.
Oh, he was fantastic. Like, what a cracking fight. That was not the fight I was anticipating. I guess that it was partly tactics by Sonny Edwards to try and gain Bam's respect early doors and standing and trading a bit more than we expected him to. And then he was forced to stick with that tactic going forward because he suffered a damaged eye, had to fight southpaw, had to stay close for him to be able to land anything. So it resulted in a great fight. For me, Bam, it's one good win. It's a very good win. Like, you should be there over Tank Davis on a short list, but it's still not quite enough for me.
Yeah, no, I'd agree. I don't think Rodriguez, like I said, it's excellent performance at the weekend, but the fight before that was, you know, was a vacant title fight where he was a heavy favourite, so I wouldn't have Bam Rodriguez up there. But you're right, a really, really good fight. Do you know what? I was slightly surprised at Sonny Edwards' tactics, but I had noticed as early on as the Mohamed Wasim fight in Dubai last year that Sonny Edwards' legs have started to go. He was fighting a guy who was 12-1, and he lost a few rounds in that fight. He lost a few rounds against Felix Alvarado, really close fight against Felix Alvarado, and then on the judges' scorecards at least. And then, you know, Andre Campos as well. He lost a few rounds there. So he's gone from kind of, you know, shutting people out, John, to having a little struggle here and there. And it just looked to me, do you know what he, and I think I said it, I think he's got the James DeGales about him, where his legs are starting to slow. He's sitting on the ropes more. And every fight's difficult now for Sonny Edwards. And so when, even though I was surprised he did the same against Jesse, against Bam Rodriguez, actually wasn't as well, because his legs looked a little bit gone. Is that wild, or is that fair?
I don't think it's wild, but I also think he does have a little bit of the James DeGales, like, but in a slightly different way. For me, the James DeGales is somebody who isn't quite as slick as people make it, because James DeGale was always complimented on being elusive and everything else, but your face doesn't look the way that James DeGale's face routinely did after fights if you're that elusive. Someone that is that elusive doesn't sit on the ropes for large portions of a fight. They are things that James DeGale routinely did. And for as much as Sonny will put together slideshows and short montages of himself evading shots, from the second he stepped up to world level, from the Maruti Mtolani fight, he was getting tagged. You know, he had massive blisters on his feet at the end of that fight. It's a difficult style to maintain for 12 rounds, and he's never quite as slick as they make out. Only the Jason Mama fight was comprehensive and clear. Everything else, there's been moments where they've got to him, he's had to trade. He just isn't what was advertised on the tin as this absolutely slick, evasive boxer, because he just doesn't have the engine to avoid punches for 12 rounds, is how I would see it. But much along the same sort of lines as you did, I believe he's like James DeGale, but just in a slightly different way.
Yeah, I think it's a fair point, actually. I think the levels is an important thing to say there, because when I think about James DeGale, and I remember whenever he was about to fight, Sky or whoever was covering his fights would show the Paul Smith fight or show clips of the Paul Smith fight, because that was quite a slick kind of performance and quite a good stoppage in that fight. But that was kind of down at British level, wasn't it? And he he never looked that slick or that spiteful again. And I think that's what happened here with Sonny, is that in the lower levels, or the guys that were perhaps a little bit on the wane, when, you know, like Mitalane, when he won the world title, you know, he had someone perhaps, you know, a little older. That Ian John Lewis card of that fight, by the way, 7-5, unreal. It's amazing when you have Boxrec up on the screen recording a podcast, and that just caught my eye. I was like, Bob Williams has it 12 rounds to nil, 121-08. And Ian John Lewis, who must have gone for a hot dog halfway through and then come back, has done it 7-5, 115, 113 to Sonny Edwards. Unbelievable. But yeah, that fight, he looked great that night, but never really looked that good again. And not to say Mitalane wasn't a good fighter, he was, but perhaps a little bit on the wane, or just suited to Sonny Edwards. So yeah, I think that's fair. I'm going to ask you a question, John. Did he quit?
He did quit.
He did.
And there's nothing wrong with a quit. Like, at the end of the day, for someone like Sonny Edwards, who gives it the big un on Twitter or X or whatever the fuck we're calling it, as often as he does, to quit, knowing everything he's going to get, I've got to give him credit for that. He's owned it. He's taking his abuse very, very well. He knew what he was doing. At the end of the day, it's a bit like the Daniel Dubois one against Joe Joyce. If you genuinely think your eyesight's going and this guy's grinding you down, I don't blame you. I wouldn't go blind for whatever flyweights are getting paid for a unification. It won't be that much. It's not going to be life-changing money. So if he wants to have a wee quit and then take all the stick on Twitter, like, fair play to him.
Oh, you know, I've already had the pot. I've already...
It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
Asked my good friend Felonious to make the podcast art for this episode. So I can't, well, I could change it, but I'd love to call the podcast A Wee Quit, because that's I might ask him, actually, see if he'll change it, because that's a great title for a podcast, A Wee Quit. But it was quite obvious. He went back to the corner. He whispered something. He leant into Grant Lewis's ear, whispered something in his ear, and instantly Grant Lewis turned around and went to the referee and said, "We're done." It was a pretty obvious quit, and that's okay. Like you said, it's absolutely fine. Like you said, there's no amount of money that's worth going blind for. There's just not. And it's only, you know, it's not like a Billy Joe Saunders where it's like, oh, I'd rather they'd have to carry me out. I'd rather be dead in the ring and all of that crap, and then to quit. Like that's not the one. But Sonny Edwards, you know, actually, I have no malice for him at all. Really, he's, you know, he does what he does on Twitter. He's a flyweight. He's got to promote himself. It's, you know, there's not much money in being a flyweight, and he's not a puncher either, so he's got to promote himself one way or another, and I don't blame him for how he has promoted himself, and fair play to him. He's got himself a unification, he's got himself pretty decent money, I hope, and maybe he'll get a fight, he'll get some more money fights. He's still a youngish man, you know. I'm sure he'll get, how old is he now, 27, I'm sure he's got, you know, a few years left at that weight, or I imagine he'll stay at flyweight. Yeah, fair play to him. What do you think Bam does next? Do you think he moves up? What do you think he does?
The Estrada fight's what's being talked about, and that is right up my street. That's some high-level technical violence, and I'm here for it.
Yeah, they're both technically very, very good fighters. I don't know what weight it would be. If Estrada can still do Superfly, then that's great. I'm all for that. I love Estrada. He's a proper bit of me. Nice, a really good, slick but nasty fighter. Him and Bam, sign me up. Absolutely, I'd love to see that. A little talk about Chocolatito as well, but I think Chocolatito needs a win or two. You know, he's had rightly or wrongly, he's had two losses to Estrada now. Last fight was against Estrada, I think he lost that fight. He needs a win or two. I want to see him get the win back off Rungvisai. I want to see him batter the shell of Rungvisai and then go from there.
Yeah, that would work. Like, Chocolatito beat Estrada in that last fight. There's no two ways about it for me. You know, he's got that big win over Caliafai as well. I would have no issue with him fighting Chocolatito, given that he's working his way through the true four kings of this era. He's already got half of them. He needs Estrada, he needs Chocolatito, and don't let them get too old before you face them.
Yeah, it's now. If he wants to fight them and put himself, you know, to get the rub, if you like to use the wrestling term, to get the rub off those guys and to, you know, to build a legacy, then it's now. It's Estrada next, then maybe Chocolatito. Ringvasai's probably a bit too fat now. He's eating too many rats and he's too big now. But yeah, I'm all for it. What's your, you know, you said you love a wee quit. What's your favourite quit job?
I think my favourite is Jose A. Gonzalez, who was this unknown Puerto Rican who the WBO, because they're based in Puerto Rico, made the mandatory challenger for Ricky Burns a few years back. And there was no footage of him online. He appears and he is a slick, stylish switch hitter, and he's giving Burns absolute fits. But Burns then starts to come back and is starting to chip away. And the second some pressure is applied to this guy, he quits in the corner, citing a hand injury. But why I really like Jose A. Gonzalez is because he's done it twice.
Nice.
He fought Diego Magdaleno, gets hit with a perfectly valid body shot, manages to convince the referee it was a low blow, was given 5 minutes to recover, was rolling about, milking it for all it's worth, and after the 5 minutes, can't recover, so it's a TKO win for Magdaleno. It's two quits, both were spectacular, so I think he is my all-time great quitter. What's your favourite kill?
All-time favourite quitter. Oh, God, there's another good podcast title. well, we did speak about this, full disclosure, me and John was talking about, every time there's a quit job, I'll quickly text John, John, did you see that quit job? Like, every single time. But it is Victor Ortiz, because he's got layers to it. He's got different ways where he can quit. Think about Marcus Maidana fight. He doesn't quit. He just kind of stands there and doesn't react, and the ref just waves it off. Then you've got the Floyd Mayweather fight, which was almost like the suicide by cop way of quitting. He just did something crazy where, actually, it's not quite the suicide by cop. That's Oscar De La Hoya against Manny Pacquiao, where he just stood there and let himself get beat up. But actually, it's kind of similar. Victor Ortiz, where he does a really egregious foul against Floyd Mayweather. That was one way to try and quit. And then when that didn't work, he just stood there and let Floyd tee off on him and then lose the fight that way. And then my all-time favourite from Victor Ortiz was Andre Berto too. He quit so bad that people were throwing drinks at him. People were throwing burgers at him. I think someone in the crowd tried to fight him. He quit so badly, or so artistically that night, that he got the people going, and that's true classic heel work there from Victor Ortiz. And so he is my favourite quitter. The Berto one is my favourite because it was just really obvious. It was just a really obvious, and it was a really good, it was building into a really good fight, that one, where they both got knocked down. But the second it got turned on to Ortiz, he just kind of looked at the ref and goes, "Nah, I can't be fucked no more, ref," and then that was it. So yeah, that's my favourite. He's my favourite quitter, and I like him as a guy. And the Berto 2, Andre Berto 2, was my favourite quit job. Actually, did you see that Andre Berto and Robert Guerrero boxed at the weekend? I didn't even know that it had happened until it happened. Did you see any
of it? On the final Showtime card, no, I couldn't subject myself to that. Like, I do not need to see a rematch between two absolutely shot fighters.
I'm usually a fan of the shot fighter rematch. Like, I don't mind it because they're both shot, and so let them make a couple of quid. Like, I don't mind it as long as nobody gets hurt, then that's fine. But the Showtime went out with a whimper, didn't it, John?
It did. It was really sad. Like, the main event wasn't a main event. That, as the big selling point, was just disappointing. It deserved better. You know, I station that's had Corrales Castillo on it, that's launched many world champions through the Showbox series, it deserved a better send-off than that absolute whimper it went out with.
Yeah, it was... Even Jim Gray's monologue was... You just have to compare it to Jim Gray's when HBO finished. And Jim Gray's in tears, you know, not Jim Gray, sorry, Jim Lampley. When Jim Lampley was doing the sign-off for HBO, you know, 5-6 years ago now, and he's clearly emotional, but HBO gave him the time and gave him the platform to do a send-off for HBO and for the fighters that had fought on that network. And then Jim Gray, it looked like it was getting filmed on an iPad, and there was loads of people still in the ring, so you could hear the background noise. There was the Watson twins' dad in the background, just standing there looking at the camera. It was so poorly done, and it was just treated like an afterthought. And it's, you know, it's like you said, it's a network that's carried boxing for a long time. It's put on some fantastic fights. It's had some fantastic fighters, and because it was the last, you know, boxing card on Showtime, it was almost like that guy that's getting laid off, and he's just doing his last days, you know, he just can't be fucking arsed anymore. And that's just what it felt like for the people on Showtime. And I felt really bad, actually, for Jim Gray and, you know, people that had been doing it for a long time. It's really sad.
Yeah, it deserved better. It really did. But this is boxing. Like, most greats never get a proper send-off in the ring. They tend to get battered by somebody who years previous they would have beaten, and that's what it felt like for Showtime.
Yeah, it did. It just felt like, yeah, an afterthought. It was sad. I felt bad for Andre Berto, because this was like his comeback and he wanted to get his win back over Robert Guerrero. And I like Berto, but he lost again. he came up against a style that just doesn't work for him. This quite tall but strong and tough southpaw. It was just, yeah, it just didn't, it's not. And as you know, Guerrero's been relatively active more than Berto has. And he just, yeah, and I think that's why, just a little bit fresher and a little bit more active. And that's what got him the win in the end. But I feel bad for Berto, but hopefully he goes to do something else now. What did you think about Chris Billam Smith's performance against Mastanac down in Birmingham a couple of weekends ago?
I didn't think it was as terrible as some people did, because I quite like a fight where the heavy favourite is having a bit of a nightmare, has to keep chipping away and grind it out. Like, I followed a lot of Ricky Burns' career. There's been nights like that. Mm. Like the Kirill Relic fight, where you've just got to grind it out. And that's what Chris Billam Smith did. It wasn't panning out right. He started getting a foothold, and he either broke a rib, broke his heart, or Mastanac just didn't fancy it. One of the three. But whichever way, like, good on Chris Billam Smith. I like when a champion shows that they've got some heart, that when it's going wrong, they don't run out of ideas and feel sorry for themselves and look completely puzzled. He just kept chipping away and he got there. What did you think?
It was, do you know what, it was an interesting fight. Mastanac was landing some good shots, but nothing that, he never looked hurt Billam Smith. He always looks, to me, he always looks a little bit fragile. He always looks like he can be hurt, but it doesn't, he never looks badly wobbled, but he sometimes looks like he can be buzzed and does get buzzed sometimes, but nothing mental. And Mastanac was doing well, but very, very basic fundamentals, lots of straight shots, did well with them. But it did look like Billam Smith was starting to turn the tide. The body shots were starting to land. He kind of wasn't working the body. Mastanac was guilty of that as well. He wasn't working the body when he really needed to. And it was Billam Smith that worked that out first. You know, Shane McGuigan proves once again that what a fantastic corner man he is. And he got the result. He got him out. And he actually, you could see in that round that the body shots were working. They were starting to turn the tide. And it's pro boxing. It's not amateur boxing. It's not about point scoring. It's about getting a W by any means necessary, whether that's getting the stoppage like he did, or or winning on you know winning a points decision on the kind of Victor Ortiz quit-o-meter. Where would you put Mastanak's kind of quit job? Was it, you know, kind of a, oh, it's not so bad, 1 out of 10, or someone's throwing a pie at you, 10 out of 10? What sort of level would you put it between 1 and 10?
I would give it a 5. I'd give Mastanak the benefit of the doubt here, because at the end of the day, those body shots were sinking in. It is possible that he's broken a floating rib, etc., etc. So I'll give him the benefit of the doubt on that one. Whenever there's a serious injury, or at least the potential of it, you've got to give them the benefit of the doubt, because if the x-rays surface on Twitter, you're going to look like a dick if you don't.
Yeah, yeah. Is Sonny Edwards around a 5 as well, or is it a bit lower because of the eye?
I'd put Sonny Edwards a little bit lower because he's fighting a guy with pound-for-pound level ability. It's getting into the second half of the fight. It's getting away from him, and he has got a broken orbital bone, according to Sonny Edwards. I've got no reason to doubt him. So I'd probably stick that at about a 3. You can see that there was definitely an injury. It forced him southpaw very early on in the fight. I don't think there's any disputing he suffered an injury. If it's as bad as he felt it was, we won't know unless he posts x-rays. Not that he has to, but that's the only way you ever get through confirmation of these things. So, yeah, like, it's a relatively low-level quit job for me.
How'd you about say? An 8. Sonny Edwards is about an 8, just because of how animated the trainer was when he came out. It was the whispering in the ear, and then Sonny Edwards trying to go in, ref, we need to quit here. So it's about an 8 for me. I remember, actually, after Mayweather-Pacquiao, I remember Pacquiao doing the excuse about the shoulder surgery, and you saying about posting x-rays and all that sort of thing. And I remember pretty much every day tweeting in caps lock, show us the scar, because I wanted to know that he had surgery. And if we don't see x-rays, if we don't see an Instagram live of the surgery being done, then I'm calling bullshit.
Yeah, well, David Hay's a big believer in that. He loves sending pictures of himself in a hospital bed wearing a gown with tubes up his nose every time a fight was cancelled.
I remember seeing his Achilles, him posting a picture of his Achilles after the second Tony Bellew, or the first Tony Bellew fight, sorry. And it just looked like cheese string. Just looked fucking mullered. But it could have been anything, because I'm not a doctor. I don't know what an Achilles looked like. He could have just stuck a cheese string and just punched a granny out of it and said, look, this is my Achilles. You've mentioned Ricky Burns a couple of times. Like me with Floyd, is the way you view boxing viewed around Ricky Burns?
It's not viewed entirely around Ricky Burns, but for a long time, there wasn't really a lot to be excited about in Scottish boxing, and Ricky Burns got absolutely mullered by Alex Arthur on the way up. He was the guy you didn't expect to do anything. You know, he gets a world title fight that he didn't deserve because Frank manages to get him the WBO mandatory position for the super featherweight title. And they managed to bring Roman Rocky Martinez over here to Kelvin Hall, which is a small venue in Glasgow. He gets dropped hard in the first round. You think it's all going to go terrible, and he manages to battle back. And there was nights like that. Like, he was going to be fed to Kevin Mitchell, and he stops Kevin Mitchell. So he was the guy who was carrying the torch for Scottish boxing for a long time, and he wasn't a dickhead, which is quite important, because we've had Scott Harrison, who was a dickhead. The sort of guy who gets released from jail and immediately gets himself back into trouble. Just cannot help himself. A guy who shouldn't be allowed within a mile of a pub, an off-license, or a shop that sells booze. But with Ricky Burns, he was just a guy who's still working in Sports Direct when he won his first world title. You know, it was a real underdog story, and then to go and become a three-weight world champion and things, he's always someone I'll think of very fondly. And then we had Josh Taylor carrying the baton briefly, burning brightly, undisputed at 140. And now it's all going a little bit quiet again.
Yeah, no, that's fair enough. It's It's fine. It's absolutely fine. We do, you know, it's like Gary Neville on Sky Sports. He views football around Manchester United and how teams and players compare to those at Manchester United. And I've decided that's how you view boxing, how they compare to Ricky Burns. If they're better than Ricky Burns, they're an all-time great. And if they're worse than Ricky Burns, they're dog meat and they should never be in the sport again. That's how I've decided you view boxing, and that's I'm sticking to that.
Cool. We'll view everybody on the Ricky,
on the Ricky Burns scale. If they're as good as Ricky Burns, they're great. If they're not, then they're shit. Yeah. I mean, that's a pretty safe way of doing it. What was next? I wanted to. It's obviously the Saudi card this weekend. I don't want to age the pod too much, really. Let's, you know what? We'll do that at the end. We'll do the prediction stuff at the end.
Cal, before we go any further, there's one thing that I need to say about the Chris Billings.
Oh yeah, go ahead.
Did you see Fran Hennessy coming out dancing to Ghetto Superstar?
Oh, no, I didn't see that. Oh, bless her. Was she?
Yeah, it's on Twitter. There she is from Bushy Heath or somewhere like that. Her dad's a promoter. The whitest of white girls dancing on her way to the ring to Ghetto Superstar.
Really? Really? Kind of retro as well. It's just like, you know, she doesn't feel old enough to know that song. It's like 25 years old, that song, but I need to watch that now. I'll post it on the Below the Belt Twitter feed. I'll do that. I'll post it on the Twitter feed later on, because I did not see that. I'm gutted I didn't see that. But actually, John, I find it really difficult to watch people make tits of themselves. Like, it's like, you think of like X Factor auditions or that sort of, I can't do it. Like, if someone, it's almost like that type of humor, you think of like The Office and that type of humor, like I like it, but when someone does something that's really cringe and awful, I can't do it. I have to turn it off. It's just a bit too much. Is it that bad?
Oh, it is ridiculous. She's enjoying it way too much. It's not just walking to the ring with that being your song, which would be still a little bit weird, but acceptable. But it's the fact that she's really into it and dancing, and it's like, oh no, don't do that.
They seem to be spending more on their entrance. Boxer seem to be spending more on entrances than they do on their undercard. Ben Whittaker had a bit of an entrance as well, didn't he?
He did. What are your thoughts on Ben Whittaker?
What did he? He won Olympic gold, didn't he? It was gold.
Yes.
Yeah. He won an Olympic gold, or he's an Olympic medalist. I'm pretty sure he's Olympic gold, but we'll go with that. He's fighting people that are well below his level. But the way he's acting, I'm actually kind of on the fence with him. There's like,
I was silver.
Yeah, it's like this, there's like this thing of where he's kind of really taking the piss out of these people that are below his level, but at the same time, it's like, well, you got to sell yourself. And he doesn't have a big fan base. He's not from like Stoke or some place where he's going to draw the football crowd. So he's got to promote himself another way, and he's doing that by being a little bit posy and a flashy. So I don't blame him, but I think, mate, you're supposed to beat these people. There's nothing to show off about. I don't know. How do you feel about him?
I like him. Like, I completely get what you're saying just now. Just now, it does feel a little bit school bully-ish. If he maintains this persona as he goes up the levels and does it against decent guys and then good guys and potentially world-class guys, then absolutely, I'm all for it. I love a bit of a bad guy. I love a bit of a wind-up merchant. And he's going to get under people's skin, and I'm here for it.
Yeah, you got to love a heel. You got to love good quality heel work. And he's... right now, he's doing good heel work because his fights aren't particularly fun. But actually, on that undercard, you saw the best and worst of him. You saw the showboating, which was perhaps unnecessary. But then when it was time to get the guy out of there, boy, did he get him out of there. And he was spiteful and he was nasty and he left no doubt. So that's fair, isn't it, John?
Absolutely. I think it showed everything that's good about him. And the other thing is, like, it's a bit of the James DeGales. unfortunately, it is much harder to win the British public over as a person of colour than it is as a white person. If you've got a white boxer with a bit of personality about themselves who won an Olympic medal, they're going to become a national sweetheart in no time. Like, AJ had to have this curated, stay humble, stay hungry persona that was very managed to win people over. So I get it. Chances are there's going to be a significant proportion of people who are going to have some sort of dislike to him anyway. So he might as well ramp it up to 11 and go a bit Chris Eubank Senior.
Yeah, it's, you know, in the words of your TB and mine, you pay to see me win, you pay to see me lose, but you'll pay. And, you know, you better pay and watch. And so as long as people pay to see him win or lose, then fair play to him. And I hope he goes up the levels, and I hope he takes the piss out of some, you know, unified world champion, because that would be great. And I think that's when actually people will really start to love him. I think once he goes through the levels and he's ripping the piss out of some French European champion, I think people will really, really, especially us over here, we hate the French. So I think, you know, the spirit of World War II never leaves us, John. Never. Never. It's all we've got to be proud of. So, you know, it's, yeah, it never leaves us. But, yeah, I think if he takes the piss at some French European champion, I think you could see the crowd start to turn in his favour after that. Before we do the weekend, one big prediction for 2024. So a few years ago, as an example, to help you out, as an example, because I'm quite proud of this, I said, Teofimo Lopez would lose a fight. He was undefeated. That year he lost a fight. I'm pretty proud of that, that I called that. What's anything kind of big out there that you think is going to happen this year?
I'm trying to think now, because as always, you're going to put me on the spot with something that wasn't in the running order.
I love
order.
Doing that. So I know.
So now I'm trying to think off the top of my head. Like, I don't think picking Usyk to beat Fury is
big enough.
Much of a bold prediction. Actually, I've got a bold prediction. Okay. Opetaia is the canary down the mineshaft.
Right.
That Saudi Arabia and the PIF are ultimately going to start making belts completely irrelevant because of the money involved. Opetaia has dropped his IBF belt to fight Ellis Zorro as part of this two-fight deal because the IBF were stringent about him fighting Bredis next. So he's dropped the belt because of the sheer amount of money involved. He's just referring to himself as the lineal champion. I think more and more fighters will do this because, as you said earlier on, the Joshua Hergovich fight likely won't happen because PIF want Joshua Wilder, and that'll probably have rematches, etc., etc. Saudi Arabia to make belts irrelevant starting in 2024.
Oh, that's nice. That's a great shout. So do you think by extension the Ring Magazine belt becomes more prominent?
I think so. Opetaia has used it as the marketing, still saying that he's the lineal champion, he's the ring champion, the division runs through him, etc., etc. If they can make these unifications and then ultimately undisputed fights have the ring belt that doesn't come with a mandatory, they can completely call the shots. They don't have to whistle to anybody else's tune.
That's a good shout. And by extension of that, Ring Magazine gets bought by PIF, and because money's no object, they start doing print mags again, and it comes through your letterbox with the pizza menus for free. I want that. Not for Boxing News, because Boxing News, and all it has in it to balance it out is a two-page spread in the middle praising His Excellency. And do you know what? We can live with that.
Will it still arrive 2 months
yeah,
late?
Yeah, still, as is tradition. But, yeah, it's the same old magazine, same writers, everything else. It's got two-page spread on His Excellency, and then it's free. You get it with your pizza menu every month.
So what's your bold prediction, Kel, if you can top the Teofimo pick?
Chris Eubank wins a world title.
Ooh, I like it.
Yeah. Did you see his tweet the other day?
Which one?
It was the one about he'd agreed to fight for a world title or two world titles, and then it got pulled because they wanted him to fight. I think it was Etinosa Aliyah for the IBO title instead. I think he wins a proper world title. I don't know if it'll be against Zanibek or it'll be against somebody else, but I think, or you know, Eris Landry Lara, sorry, all tongue tied, all these names. I think he wins world title.
I like that. I'd like to see him fight the ghost of Lara. Lara's become very interesting in the back end of his career when the legs went and he's forced to stand and trade. He's become a very fan-friendly fighter. He had that great battle with Jarrett Hurd.
Yeah, I was in the building for that. I was in it was at Brooklyn, wasn't it? I was there for that. Fantastic fight. No, that was Austin Trout I was in the building for. Sorry. I think Eubank and Lara is a fun fight, actually. I think Eubank would be a little bit too fresh and a bit big, but WBA title, he's won the WBA interim before, Chris Eubank Jr. I think him and Lara, let's get it done.
I like it.
Okay. If anybody at home wants to send us their bold predictions for 2024, it's got to be bold, though. Not, you know, Usyk beats Fury or something that's kind of, you know, 60-40, something like big, like that no one's really thinking about. Does a Coley come back and, you know, does a Coley become world heavyweight champion? You know, does the Sonny Edwards, Charlie Edwards fight get made? Does Huey Fury fight his brother or his cousin Tyson and spark him? I want to say big. Give us big predictions for 2024 on our Twitter or in the reviews. Do it in the reviews. That'd be fun. Leave us a 5-star review on iTunes, Spotify, wherever. And in your review, give us the 5 stars. Say bad things about me. I don't mind. And give us your reviews for 2024. That's what we want. Where was we going to go to next? We were going to talk about the Saudi card and then we were going to get a little predictions for new etapas. So what I was going to do, John, if you don't mind, I was going to whip through the Saudi card and we was both going to do very specific. I want specific predictions, though, John, like rounds. Rounds, even quick jobs. We're going to go specific. OK, let's go from the top to the... Actually, we'll go bottom to top. Filip Hrgović, Mark Dmory, specific... method and round.
Filip Hrgović, knockout, second round, let's go.
Yeah, okay, I'll go first round. Overhand, straight right hand. You know he's a southpaw, but straight right round. Don't know much about these two. Frank Sanchez and Junior Farr.
Let's go with Frank Sanchez, round 4, TKO.
Ooh, I'm going absolutely rotten fight. Rotten. Holyfield Ruiz levels shit, absolute dog meat of a fight, and ends in a decision for Frank Sanchez, wide one. I can't say this geezer. Makhmudov against Ajit Kabayel, again at heavyweight. Let's have a pick for this one. This will be fun.
I'll go Arslan Bek by decision, having been frustrated by Kabayel being on his bike for large periods, as he did against Derek Chisora.
I'm going to go Makhmudov. Final round stoppage. Ooh. I'm going to go for that. Okay, now the fun stuff. Daniel Dubois against Jarrell Miller.
Cal, I've got no idea. This is the most interesting fight on the card because
it's
a bit of a freak show of a fight. It's the equivalent of gawking at the bearded lady. Yes. It is strange. It is the big punching, mentally weak prospect against the doped up to the eyeballs guy who weighs about the same as a be at 500. You know, it's weird. It's interesting. So let's go with Dubois in an uneventful decision.
I'm going Miller quits. Dubois makes him quit. Ooh. I think he makes him quit in seven rounds. Yeah, I think Miller quits. And it's going to be like a number 10 on the quit scale, like Victor Ortiz 2. People are going to be throwing all sorts of shit at him.
Nice.
Jai Oppertaia against Ellis Zorro.
Oppertaia round 2 TKO.
Yeah, I think... Yeah, he's going to smash him up. I'm gonna say Zorro lasts a little bit longer. Maybe round five. Dimitri Bivol against Lyndon Arthur.
Bivol decision. I think I had here last time Bivol scored a stoppage.
That I've just seen that's for the IBO title as well. I don't know why that makes me excited, but it does. If they threw in the WBU and the IBC, I think I'd be excited. Just sling them all in. Let's go for the Roy Jones era. Let's just have every crappy belt on one fire. Do you know what? If the Better BF fight can't be made for politics reasons, actual world politics, not boxing politics, then let's fucking get all the shitty belts on Bivol then. Bivol, Arthur. Bivol, I think he is going to get a stoppage. Arthur looked ready to go a couple of times on that fight in Channel 5 when he won the IBO belt a couple of weeks ago. I think there's a bit of wear and tear on Arthur, and Bivol's just a fantastic fight. I'm gonna say round 11 Bivol stoppage. I think the 12 rounds might just be a bit too much for Arthur. Deontay Wilder against Joseph Parker.
Wilder KO 6.
Oh, a few rounds in, so about halfway. Wilder KO 4. Then gets him out of them 4. And perhaps now, well, I think it is. Outside of Dubois Miller, I think this is one of the most interesting fights on the card is the co-main event. Anthony Joshua against Ato Valin. What's your prediction, John?
Joshua by a decision that some people will call a robbery, some people will call a bullshit decision, other people will think he did just about enough to eke it out. Mm. But if there's a deal in place for Wilder and Joshua to fight each other next year, if they're on their feet, they're not losing a decision.
Yeah. When the fight was announced, that was my prediction. I don't like changing my mind, but just for variety's sake, Valin KO 6. Do you know what it is? A few weeks ago, when the fight was announced, I was like, yeah, I agreed with you completely. Joshua, bullshit decision. But if I was a betting man, which I'm not, or if you see me down the dog track, then yeah, all bets are off then. Literally, like, fucking, let's go. I've never been to dog races, and I'd love to go. Just so scummy, I'd love it. But yeah, if I had a second choice bet, it would be Otto Valin to clip Joshua and for Joshua not to recover. So that's my variety pick, but I do agree with you. But for variety, I'm going to say Valin in 5. Okay, that is how long we've been. Okay, nearly there. And then obviously Naoya Inoue against Marlon Topalez over in Tokyo on Boxing Day. Will we fancy him for that one?
Yeah, let's go with Inoue round 5. Topalez is not a bad fighter by any stretch of the imagination, but he's probably beaten the second best super bantamweight on the planet already.
For people that haven't seen Topalez, what type of fighter is he? How would you describe him?
He is an interesting fighter. Like, he's fast, he's got decent punch selection, he can stay in range a bit too long, he can switch off. But he's got a bit of dig about him. He's quite fast. He tends to start fights well and run out of steam in the second half. He's really not that bad. Southpaw, of course.
Oh, I think it's interesting. I think I think Inoue wins, and I think he gets the stoppage. But yeah, I think because of Topales, because of being a southpaw, because of the speed, I think he might. And Inoue, you know, he didn't blast Steph Fulton out of there. Steph Fulton was a big lump at Super Bantam. And I think Topales, I think it might take a little bit longer here. I think at Bantam, he would just wipe guys out, other than Paul Butler, iron chin Paul Butler. fair play to Butler. But, you know, he... I don't think he's gonna. I don't think he's doing that. I don't think he's gonna be doing that at Super Bantam. So I think round eight, round nine, I think Inoue gets him out of there. Body shot stoppage. What do you think Inoue does after that, or the winner does? What does? Say Inoue does win. Say our predictions are right. It's better for the sport if Inoue wins, but you know, because Inoue's Inoue. What do you think he does? Do you think he stays at Super Bantam? Do you think he stays at? Do you think he goes to Fevar? What do you think he does?
So, Inoue has stated that he's willing to hang about at Super Bantam to face his WBC mandatory, who is Luis Neri.
Yes.
And that has got extra significance because Neri's a bit of a pantomime villain to boxing fans because, you know, he comes in way overweight, he fails drug tests, the WBC lets him off with it because of contamination, because it's clenbuterol, and every Mexican test positive for it, and it's always because of contaminated beef. But in Japan, he is public enemy number one because when he won the WBC bantamweight title, he won it by stopping Shinsuke Yamanaka over there. And Yamanaka was a great action fighter, was really loved over there. But he then tested positive. They have a rematch for the vacant title, and Inoue weighs in pretty much as a super bantamweight. The title's only on the line for Yamanaka, and he gets blasted out of there by Neri. He then receives a lifetime ban by the JBC, who are the Japanese Boxing Council, who apparently could overturn that ban to let Inoue beat the ever-living crap out of him. Neri's fantastic. He plays the bad guy. He's got the stare. Aggressive southpaw. Loves a war. Was involved in the fight of the year against Azat Hovhannessian. Was in the fight of the year 2 years ago against Brandon Figueroa. If he can stand up to Inoue's punches, he's not going to be doing a Paul Butler and trying to survive to the 11th. He's going to stand his ground and throw big shots from the southpaw stance. And it's a fight I really want to see.
Yeah. Yeah, I want to see that. I think Inoue needs that. He needs a real rivalry, and a nasty kind of rivalry, not the Nonito De Niro rivalry where they're, you know, he's very, a classy guy, a nice guy. There's got to be something hidden about him though, John. He seems too nice. He does something. he I don't know. He goes to the zoo and goads the animals, or does something. You know, I don't know.
Parks on double yellow
lines. Yeah, parks in a disabled bay. Yeah, and then drags his leg like Homer Simpson in like season six. Like, just not a nice guy. I don't care. There's got to be something about it. But he needs it, I think, Inoue. I think he needs a rivalry. I think he needs to fight someone that's just unlikable or he doesn't like. And we get to see a different side to Inoue. So, yeah, I would like that. I'd like to see the new Luis Neri fight. That would be fun. Yeah, Inoue's a fantastic fighter, but he needs a rival, a real rival. I've just seen here on BoxRec, John, that Hamai Munguia is fighting John Ryder.
Yeah.
I did not know that.
And Munguia was involved in another one of the best fights of this year against Derevyanchenko. So, yeah, I'm all here for it. It'll be a good fight with John Ryder. Good test for Munguia. Another big opportunity for John Ryder. Mm. It's a fight that I think suits all parties.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, no, I Ryder needs. You know, I wasn't sure what Ryder would do after the Canelo loss, but he's got himself another big fight, and I think he's going to give Munguia a pretty good test. I think that'll be an interesting fight. Obviously, location's important, but Munguia, he's not going to be able to just be the bigger man like he's done in the past. You know, Ryder's a fully fledged super middleweight. He's gonna be there, and he's gonna match him for size. So I think that's an interesting one. I could see Ryder perhaps getting the upset there. We'll see what he's got left after that Canelo fight. What about Jonas Michaela Meyer as well?
That's a good fight. I think Meyer is on the decline. Her last few fights, there's just signs that she's maybe not the fighter she once was, whereas Tasha Jonas seems to be ageless and is just getting better. So I think Jonas probably wins a relatively wide fight on the cards, but a good fight, a very watchable fight.
Yeah, I think those two, style-wise, will match up well. I think Jonas might be a little bit more suited at the weight, a little bit more, because she's been at 154 for ages and is now down at mid welter quite comfortably. So I think, yeah, I think that'd be fun, but I think, yeah, Jonas might, if it's in England, isn't he? It's in Liverpool. Oh, hometown as well. Yeah. Fucking hell, yeah, it's pretty much nailed on. They're going to bring back Ian John Lewis to fill out the first scorecards. All's forgiven, Ian. Get in there and fill that scorecard in, son. I think she wins a decision. I think she wins a comfortable decision. And then Maya, I think we'll just stick to commentary after that. And actually, another interesting one, because I'm just looking at the box rec schedule. Hamza Shiraz against Liam Williams. That's quite interesting as well.
It's a nice test. Like, I'm quite high on Shiraz. Despite the whole Bradley Skeet debacle, I still think he's got quite a high ceiling. But I love Liam Williams. He's just a little bit spiteful. He's a little bit nasty. And it just is good to watch. If he's got anything left, this is a real litmus test. It could be what Isaac Dogbe was to Nick Ball a few weeks ago.
Yeah, the thing is with Liam Williams, he comes across a right nasty piece of work. But he probably does... the opposite to Nadito Donaire, he probably works in soup kitchens, gives to the homeless, all of that, but he doesn't tell anybody. He doesn't want anybody knowing about it. He wants everyone to think he's horrible all the time. Like Ron Swanson with his like that. It's like the Ron Swanson of the boxing world. He doesn't want people knowing he's nice. So yeah, all right, John. That'll do. We're approaching the hour mark. So thank you so much. I'm going to wish you a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year, and to everybody listening at home as well. Thanks once again, John, for coming on.
Thank you very much, Kyle. Thanks for having me. Have a wonderful Christmas and a good New Year. And thanks, people, for listening. Stick reviews in. Tell us your big, bold predictions. And we'll see you next year.
Say nice stuff about John, mean stuff about me. I can take it. It's fine. I don't mind. Thank you so much, everybody. And take care. Bye-bye. Just
Podcast Network.